And demigods. इति विदितः श्रुतं हर्ड ना बाय अस भगवान् माय लॉर्ड तत्र फॉर दैट करुणं द रीजन उच्यतं प्लीज स्पीक Translation and purports by the followers of Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maharaj Pariksit said, O Brahmana, according to what I have heard from you, all the assembled kings, sages and demigods were delighted to see the wonderful festivities of King Ajatasatru's Rajasuriya sacrifice, with the sole exception of Duryodhana. Please tell me why this was so, my lord. Next verse. Sri Bhadarayana said, that at the Rajasuriya sacrifice of your saintly grandfather, his family members, bound by their love for him, engaged themselves in humble service on his behalf. Purport. King Yudhisthira did not force his relatives to accept different tasks at the sacrifice. Rather, out of their love for him, they volunteered for such duties. Om Jnanat Vinandasya Kinanjana Shalakaya Chatsu Kanjena Tasmai Sri Guru Venamaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Siva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Hare Hare. So the situation here is that Shishupala has been vanquished after trying to disrupt the sacrifice, the Rajasuriya sacrifice, and now it is going on. Maharaj Pariksit has inquired from Shukadeva Goswami why it was, because he's heard this before, that everyone was very satisfied with the sacrifice. And especially with King Yudhisthira's way he conducted the whole thing, his very high exalted character. Everybody was very satisfied and happy, except Duryodhana. And Maharaj Pariksit is asking, so why is that? What's up with that? Of course, the reason is, who is Duryodhana is envious. It comes back to this one fundamental point of envy. You see, the thing is with envy is that you can't stand to see others doing well. That's what envy means. Basically, if somebody is better than you or better situated than you, then you feel very bad. The envy burns in the heart and you want to cut them down. Envy and pride actually are very closely related. One breeds the other. If you're very proud, that means you think yourself very wonderful. And if you see somebody better than you, that goes against your self-image. How you like to think of yourself, and how you're better, because you see somebody else better, so then you develop envy. Now this is Duryodhana's problem right from the beginning. Although King Yudhisthira is known as Ajatasatru, who knows what that means? Ajatasatru. It's often translated as one whose enemy was never born. He didn't have an enemy. Who could be the enemy of Maharaj Yudhisthira? Such a exalted character. He did not envy anyone. He was always trying to do the proper thing. So respectful of everyone. He was free from envy, actually. Maharaj Yudhisthira. So, generally such a person, such a devotee, is loved by all. Krishna even says that one who is very dear to me, or my devotee, he is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. This is largely because he's not envious. Generally, because one who's envious, they're also proud. The other envious conditioned souls, they don't like to give any glorification to that person because they don't want to further puff up that person's false ego. There's something primal in our conditioned instincts that make us, if somebody's very proud, to try and to not want to really add to that, to not want to get drawn into their whole show, their whole game. But Yudhisthira, even though despite his position of great power and influence and opulence, most people loved him. In fact, everybody loved him except Duryodhana and a handful of other demons because of their envy. The fact that everybody was giving attention to Maharaj Yudhisthira and glorifying him, that burned the heart of Duryodhana and his brothers and the other demons. This is actually the problem of the world. This is what makes this world a material world, actually. Because everybody is competing against one another for supremacy, to try and come out as the one, you know, the top, trying to come out on top. God complex. People might say, if you tell somebody, you know, you've got a God complex, just like me, but everyone's got a God complex because they want to be God. People say, no, I don't want to be God. And I've got ambition and so forth, but I don't want to be God. Of course, in our small little environment, we don't necessarily expect that we're going to become the supreme controller. But what happens if you do get power is your psychology changes, and you want to expand that more. That's why it's said that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. If you get so much power, then eventually you'll be thinking, maybe I can get that position of God. Just like Ravan, he was so powerful that he wanted to ascend to the heavenly planets by mechanical means, by building a staircase. He didn't like the fact that there was a process that he followed, Karma Kanda, to get to the heavenly planets. He didn't like that. He thought, why should I be subject to such restrictions? I am me. Let me ascend directly there by my own strength and power. So this is an expansion of that same envy and God complex. And the more power one has, the more pronounced it will become. Unless one is cultivating a service attitude. Really, at the fundamental root of what it means to have a spiritual transformation, in other words, to turn your consciousness from material to spiritual, is to change the way you look at the world. In a single fundamental way. Rather than looking at the world and thinking, what can I get? Or what's in it for me? You look at the world and you say, how can I serve? That's the fundamental psychological change that takes place in the spiritual transformation. If that doesn't take place, despite performing so many external procedures of devotional service, then the real thing has not been achieved. It's all a show. It's a farce. That service spirit has to develop. That is actually the sign that one is making advancement. Without that, it's just mundane consciousness in spiritual clothing. So Duryodhana, he had this envy, he had this exploitative, selfish mentality. And we see that he becomes humiliated. What happens is he's entering the palace of Maharaj Yudhisthira and seeing all the great opulence and becoming very envious. And this palace was built by Maya Dhanava, who was became indebted to the Pandavas after Krishna and Arjuna helped Agnidev burn up the Kandava forest. Agnidev, because everybody's offering ghee into the fire, Agnidev is the fire god, everybody offers ghee into the fire. But if you eat too much ghee, you get heartburn, because you know, it increases the fire too much, and you get indigestion. So that's Agnidev's problem, he had indigestion. But he said, if I can eat this forest, Kandava forest, which has so many medicinal herbs in it, that will help me. But every time I try to eat it, Indra comes and pours rains down on it, because he has a friend who lives in that forest. So in this way, he petitions Arjuna and Krishna to help him. And Arjuna, with his mystical bow powers, created an umbrella over the whole forest. So Agnidev could consume it all. And then there was one demon that tried to jump out of the forest, and Arjuna was locking him in there because he was going to get burned to death. But then he surrendered to Arjuna and Krishna and said, please do not kill me, I'm at your mercy. And of course when that happens, a Kshatriya acquiesces. And this turned out to be Maya Dhanava, who's a mystical architect. And out of gratitude for having his life spared, he built the Pandavas assembly house. So it had Maya, means it was illusory potency. So it had many mystical elements to its architecture. It was very bewildering. Palace to walk around and very, very magical. Lots of magical effects were created. So one of those was that there was a floor which was constructed in such a way there was pools of water there in the floor, but it's sometimes very difficult to tell where the floor stopped and the water started, or where the water stopped and the floor started. So Duryodhan was walking through the palace and he'd lift his robe, you know, sometimes to step over some water, but the water wasn't actually there. And then another time, he went to walk on the floor, and then he fell into the water. And the ladies, the Pandavas, and also the queens, were all watching this. And when they saw Duryodhana fall in the water, they all started to laugh and giggle. And Maharaj Yudhishthira was saying, no, don't laugh, this is a great offense. He is our guest, and he has just been humiliated. So don't laugh. And Krishna said, no, it is all right, you can laugh. Laugh away. So that is why Duryodhana was offended. Mainly because of his envy. This is a pretty minor offense. But because of his envy, he became furious. Because this was a slight to his pride. You see, envy is a big problem for us because of its connection to pride, because of its fundamental hold on our psychology. It's a big problem. Envy means you don't want to see others do well, and when others do well, it causes you anxiety. When a leader is envious, he tries to keep everyone down. That's a problem. You know, when you're getting your spiritual health back, when your friends or associates, people you know, if you see people doing well and you genuinely feel happy for them, then you know your spiritual health is coming back. When you see devotees doing well in devotional service and you think, that's great. And when you're liberated enough from envy, you can think, actually that devotee is a better devotee than me. When you can think that and not feel any grudge about that, then you know you're doing your spiritual health coming back. Actually you're becoming advanced. in the real devotional spirit. Being an advanced devotee doesn't mean that you can recite hundreds of slokas and you can lead a kirtan that brings the house down. It doesn't necessarily mean those things. It means that one is humble and one has love for Krishna and the love for Krishna's devotees. One has a service mood. Yes, that's a good, if you want to take the temperature, see how you feel when you see others doing well. If you feel like a bit of burning envy inside yourself, then you've got to think, why is that? Huh?
Lack of humility.
Lack of humility. It's also false ego. Because you're thinking, all good qualities come from Krishna. All opulences come from Krishna. So Duryodhan was completely the convert to that attitude. He was like, he just had an all-consuming fire of envy within his heart. And it was that fire that caused the great war of the Mahabharata, the Kurukshetra war. Because he couldn't give that envy up. He didn't want to give it up. He was stubbornly attached to that attitude. He should have been disciplined by his father. But out of attachment, Dhritarashtra lost his strength to discipline his son. Attachment causes one to become coloured, swayed in his good judgment. You see people that become attached to some idea, whether it be sense gratification or a person, they are unable to, objectively see what is going on and make a perfect decision because of that attachment. So therefore, it's good to develop knowledge and attachment. Doesn't mean one becomes callous or harsh, but one becomes objective. And treats everyone according to their qualification. This is a very important point. To treat everybody according to their qualification. That's reality. It becomes an unreality. Everything becomes a big farce and a big dream and a big illusion when people are treated not according to their qualification. Somebody's glorified too much beyond what they're actually worthy of. Or somebody who's glorified not enough, not treated properly according to their real position and realization, it becomes an unreality. And it causes all sorts of problems. And Duryodhana was disqualified because of his envy, because of his stubbornness. This disqualified him actually, and he should have been deposed. He shouldn't have had any power, any position of power and influence. Sometimes for a very misguided person, that kind of treatment to be put in your place, it's a wake up call. Oh, actually, what I'm doing is unacceptable. The consequence has to be there. Otherwise, nobody never learns or advances. Even the cosmos itself, Krishna has set it up in such a way that there is the law of cause and effect. If you act in a certain way, you get a certain reaction. If you act in a different way, you get a different reaction. And that is fixed. You can't say, but, I'm a nice person and I know the boss. Therefore, I'm not going to get what I deserve. You can't, rig the court, rig the case. That's a problem. It has to be like a system, and therefore, and clear boundaries and consequences. So that's what Duryodhana should have been treated, but he wasn't. He was given so much power and facility by his father, and despite the good counsel of so many of the wise and exalted members of the Kuru dynasty and also the Yadu dynasty, and so many people were saying, Dhritarashtra, you've got to discipline your son. Even Dhritarashtra's wife Gandhari, she came to the point where she was saying, just discipline him, for God's sake. He's causing too much of a ruckus. But it didn't happen. Therefore, he got his reaction in the end. Bhimasen broke his pride, just like he said he would. When Duryodhana slapped his thigh in front of Draupadi as an insult to her womanhood and chastity, Bhimasen said, he was furious. He said, I will break those fires in battle. And he said to Dushasana, who dragged Draupadi into the assembly to be disrobed, he said, I will pull out your heart and I will drink your blood. And he did that. His determination was absolute, and he had they had the power of Dharma on their side. More than that, they were devotees, so they had Krishna behind them. Another thing that envy does also is actually stops the preaching. Prabhupada says, this is Prabhupada's amazing vision, he said that to stop the Krishna consciousness movement, or just to not preach this Krishna consciousness movement, that's envy of the conditioned souls. That's envious. It's a very subtle point. It's actually true. So the next point is the point of voluntary service. Sri Badarayani said, at the Rajasuya sacrifice of your saintly grandfather, he's talking to Maharaj Pariksit, who is a descendant of Yudhishthira Maharaj, his family members, bound by their love for him, engaged themselves in humble service on his behalf. This is real leadership. I was speaking to Adam yesterday about this, and he was saying, can't we just force people to do something? You know, why doesn't such and such devotees just do it? You know? He was saying, yeah. In one sense, he's got a point. But you can't run a voluntary movement like that. Leadership gurus, they often say that leadership in a volunteer movement is the most intensive type, because you can't leverage any kind of incentives. You can't say, look, I'm paying you, so you do what I damn well say. You can't say that. Or otherwise, you're out of here, I'll get somebody else. You can't say that. Because everybody's here according to their own natural enthusiasm for the cause. That's why relationships are very important for the Krishna consciousness movement to go on. Prabhupada said, your love for me will be shown in how you cooperate together to push on this Krishna consciousness movement. When there isn't that sweetness in the Vaishnava Sangha, it becomes very difficult to get things done. So, the family members and the friends of Mara and the citizens of Mara Yudhisthira were inspired just by his good qualities, by his allegiance to Dharma. They wanted to serve him. They were inspired by the cause which he represented. And their service spirit came out voluntarily and spontaneously. We should always remember that we are engaged in this Krishna consciousness process voluntarily. Sometimes people, you know, say to the devotees, oh, you have to do that, you have to do this, and you have to do that other thing, right? Especially the parents, sometimes they say that to devotees. Yeah, you have to do this, right? And always it's important that the devotees explain, no, no. There's a reason for it, and I choose to do it. And we have to realize this ourselves. Because if it comes to the point where we feel, I just have to do this, I have to do that, and I have to do this other thing, then we're going to lose a lot of enthusiasm. We have to reflect always why we're here, what we're doing. We have to be very conscious of the reasons behind everything. We have to analyze. If there's some doubt in our mind, we shouldn't run away from it. We should go to its root. This is what it means to be a seeker of the truth. Is you don't sideline out things. Because this will just, if you get too much of that going on inside of you, you will have no power anymore. You have no strength. You'll just be going on in that kind of a dull, shell-like type of existence. So you have to get to the heart of what you're doing. You have to become determined and realize I'm doing this voluntarily and I'm enthusiastic about it. That's important. The voluntary service spirit. And often what motivates us is seeing personalities we admire. The most amazing people I've met in my life are all devotees. Of course there's some admirable people who are non-devotees. But even the other people I admire, they've got some kind of spiritual faith. But definitely the most people with the most exalted qualities that, you know, when I meditate on them, you know, stir my heart and even, you know, stir a sense of loyalty and desire to serve them, they're devotees because of their good qualities. They're going to do what's right, what's noble, you know, whether they want it or not. They're going to stand up for that. So this is Maharaj Yudhisthira's character. And this is what inspired that natural voluntary service. Even Krishna wanted to serve his devotee. Krishna took the service. The next set of verses, we won't read them today, but they explain what all the different devotees and family members did. What did Krishna do? Washed everyone's feet. See, Krishna, you know, he wants to actually to be a devotee. This is an esoteric point. Everybody wants to be God, but God wants to be what? A devotee. This is the secret of Lord Chaitanya, actually. Lord Chaitanya wants to become a servant. So therefore it's called Krishna's called Triyuga. That means he comes in three ages, not four. This is Lord Brahma is praying to Lord Nrisimhadeva. Oh, Lord Brahma was actually scared of Lord Nrisimhadeva's ferocious anger. And therefore his prayers couldn't come so naturally. But anyway, he said, you are Triyuga. Because you come and appear in three of the four yugas. It took Prahlad Maharaj with his natural... He couldn't be scared of Lord Nrisimhadeva because he loved him so much. He just thought, wow, Lord Nrisimhadeva looks so beautiful with his, in his furious state, you know, with blood dripping from his claws, you know, and his fiery eyes. Ah, oh, so beautiful, wow. So that is Vajchana Avatar. Lord actually Krishna does come in four ages. He comes in Kali Yuga as well. How? Chana Avatar, hidden incarnation. He comes as Lord Chaitanya. And he doesn't want to be known as an avatar because he's playing the role of a devotee. But his devotee is new. Lord Chaitanya's devotee is new. Your Lord Vishnu. And you're Krishna himself. Vishnu, Vishnu! Don't say such things. This is Lord Chaitanya's response. No, no. It's not true. He never admitted. And then, you know, some devotees were trying to prove shastrically, you're Lord Krishna himself. And then Lord Chaitanya said, an avatar of God will never say he's an avatar. If such a person claims to be an avatar, then you know he's bogus. That's all he said. These days, of course, you get people coming out. Yeah, yeah, I'm an avatar of God. You know, you can worship me. You know, come to my seminar. I'll teach you how to be avatar as well. But Lord Chaitanya never said that. But his devotees knew. And I get that's a This is a good time to make a transition to the other thing I was just going to say a little bit about, which is Jiva Goswami and Jagadisha Pandit. Because it was the Goswami, you know, the devotees of Lord Chaitanya's time, they had no doubt who Krishna was, they had no doubt who Lord Chaitanya was. Especially Lord Chaitanya demonstrated such love, devotion, such a consciousness. He was so Krishna conscious that you could have no doubt around him. But for posterity, so this Krishna consciousness movement would go on, it needed to be established shastrically. There needed to be books about it. You know, so in the future we can understand what we're doing. And one says, if you see a very Krishna conscious person like Srila Prabhupada, he inspired this kind of super rational, and beyond rationality, this faith from his disciples. They practically didn't know what the hell they were doing. One time this reporter came in, you know, this was in the early days, I think it was like a small alternative newspaper reporter. He came in to where Prabhupada was staying with his disciples. And he kind of went through the temple room, and there's this devotee sitting around, and beads, and all sorts of strange things. And then he came into Prabhupada's room. And, you know, they're respectful. And then he said, so what are your students doing? And Prabhupada says, I do not know. At the end of the day. But anyway, this is it. And if you watch some of the early videos, you know, it's really spaced out. Hippies, you know. Yeah, he says, yeah, I haven't reached the highest enlightenment yet, you know. But I'm still trying, I've been here a week, you know. You know, this is hard, you know. Don't expect that you'll achieve it overnight. You know, I've been here a whole week and I'm still working on it, you know. But anyway, they had so much faith and love to see the Prabhupada just because of his Krishna conscious. They could see his every movement, his every gesture, every joint of his body, every facial expression, every word just radiated a higher consciousness. And somehow or other they were fascinated by that. And they fell in love with him. And it was the same with Lord Chaitanya. But the service of the Goswamis was to establish the shastric underpinning of the Krishna consciousness movement. And probably the most prolific of the Goswamis in terms of writing was Jiva Goswami. So this appearance day to day. So I'll read you something from Wikipedia about Jiva Goswami, undoubtedly written by devotees. So Jiva Goswami, 15 something or other till 1618, Chaitanya era, is one of the most prolific and important writers from the Gaudiya Vaishnava school of Hinduism, producing a great number of philosophical works from the theology and practice of Bhakti Yoga and associated disciplines. He was a member of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, being the nephew of the two leading figures, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Birth and early years. There seems to be some controversy among biographers about Jiva Goswami's birth. Some opine that he lived in 1511 to 1596, while others claim that he lived from 1533 to 1618. Not much is known about Jiva Goswami's childhood. He was born in Ramakali in the district of Malda, West Bengal, as the son of Srivallabha Mallika, also known as Anupam, the younger brother of Rupa and Sanatan. So Rupa and Sanatan Goswami are Jiva Goswami's uncle. The younger brother of, his mother's name is unknown. He had a strong affinity to the worship of Krishna, even from his childhood, and excelled in his education, completing his studies in Sanskrit Vyakarana, grammar, and Kavya poetics in a very short period. When Jiva Goswami was 3 or 4 years old, his uncles resigned from their magisterial post at the court of a London Hussein Thug, ruled 1493 to 1519, after their initial meeting with the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is something, this is Jiva Goswami's great intelligence. See, he was 3 or 4 years old, and he saw his uncles, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, who were a lot older obviously, resign from their government post. They were so, you know, that's the higher echelons of society. Rich, wealthy, respected. Just after they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and they thought, what is the use of all this? And they left it. And they decided to join the ranks as his mendicants. As, you know, they became, joined his ranks as mendicants. They became his followers. Jiva's father, Anupam, also met with Chaitanya at this time and followed the footsteps of his elder brothers and proceeded to travel to Rupa and Vrindavan. So hearing that his father and uncles had made their decision to work in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the young Jiva Goswami, we're talking about a 4-year-old boy here, decided to join them also. You know, obviously this, he didn't leave that point, but as he grew up he's thinking, this is a great statement actually. If these people who are so materially successful are giving it all up, you know, to basically have one piece of cloth and a water pot and follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what does that mean? What does that mean? There must be a higher taste there. There must be, this must be something so much higher and more significant. According to the biographical work of Bhakti Ratnaka, of Narahari Chakravarti, Jiva had a dream of Chaitanya at this time. This gave him the impetus to leave home and join Rupa and Sanatan. It is unclear from his biographies whether or not Jiva actually met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally. Jiva Goswami travelled to Navadvip in West Bengal and met with Nityananda Ram, one of the foremost followers of Lord Chaitanya. Nityananda took Jiva to all the holy places in Navadvip and they circumambulated the entire area together. This marked the beginning of the Gaudiya tradition of Navadvip Parikram, circumambulation of the 9 sections of Navadvip. After the pilgrimage, Nityananda Prabhu gave his blessings for the young Jiva to proceed towards Vrindavan. Jiva Goswami went on to Benares, where he studied for some time under the tutelage of Madhusudana Vidyavachaspati, the brother of the famous logician and Vedantist Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Under Vidyavachaspati, Jiva mastered the 6 systems of Indian philosophy known as the Sadarshan. So, the main characteristic of Jiva Goswami is his incredible philosophical intelligence. So in a very short time he mastered the 6 main philosophical schools of thought in India. In 1535, Jiva arrived in Vrindavan where he remained under the tutelage of his uncles, Rupa and Sanatan. By this time his father Anupam had died. He accepted initiation from Rupa Goswami, so he became a disciple of his uncle, Rupa Goswami, and was taught the esoteric principles of devotion to Krishna. Jiva helped to edit the writings of Rupa and Sanatan and assisted them in their work in propagating Gaudiya Vaishnavism and excavating the lost holy places of Vrindavan. After the passing of Rupa and Sanatan, Jiva Goswami became the foremost authority in the Gaudiya Vaishnava line. In 1542, Jiva established one of the prominent and important temples in the Vrindavan area, the Radha Damodar Mandir. So that's where Srila Prabhupada stayed before coming to America. Installing deities of Radha and Krishna that had been personally carved by Rupa Goswami. At that time he also established the Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha, World Vaishnava Association, and the Rupanuga Vidyapita, an educational faculty for Gaudiya Vaishnavas to study the works of Rupa and Goswami, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. His erudition and spirituality was so famous that the Mongol Emperor Akbar became his ardent admirer and donated paper for his writing. In 1558, Jiva instructed his students, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, and Shyamananda, to go to Bengal and propagate the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy and to take with them the original manuscripts that had been written by Rupa and Sanatana. Achintya Beda Beda philosophy. It was in the Sava Samvadini commentary of the Six Sundaras of Hindu philosophy that Jiva Goswami first wrote the Achintya Beda Beda philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In essence, the philosophy of Achintya Beda Beda, or inconceivable oneness and difference, avoided the extremes of Shankara's monistic Advaita Vedanta and Madhva's pure dualism, Advaita, by interpreting the material and spiritual potencies of the Supreme Person, Bhagavan, as being simultaneously one with him and different from him. Literary achievements. There are about 25 literary works attributed to Jiva Goswami. Number one, Harinam Amrita Vyakarana. This work is a book on Sanskrit grammar wherein each and every word, syllable and grammatical rule is explained in relation to Krishna and his pastimes. Of course, that's what Lord Chaitanya was doing. Sutra Malika. Sutra Malika is a grammatical work dealing with the derivation of Sanskrit words. Dhatu Sangraha. The Dhatu Sangraha is a work on the verb roots of Sanskrit words, because you can see he's very scholarly. He's going into all the depth of the Sanskrit language. Radha Krishna Archana Chandrika, the Rasamrita Shesha. Jiva's Rasamrita Shesha deals with Sanskrit composition. Jiva has based this work on his Sahita Dharma of Vishwanath Kaviraj, but has used many examples of his own as well as examples from other Goswamis. Madhava Mahotseva. In Madhava Mahotseva, Jiva Goswami describes the coronation ceremony of Radha when she was given the position of Queen of Vrindavan. This is all very esoteric stuff. It doesn't appear directly in the Bhagavatam, actually. But the Goswamis, because of their association with Lord Chaitanya, because of their original spiritual position, they had revelations about all these things. And they wrote about them. Sankalpa, Kalpa Dhruma, Jiva Goswami explains the eightfold daily pastimes of Radha and Krishna after the Kaliya Lila in the form of a prayer. Gopala Vrudavali. This is a short poem by Jiva extolling the glories of Gopala Krishna in 38 verses. Vavarta Suchakka Champu, the Gopala Tapani Upanishad commentary. The Gopala Tapani Upanishad is a minor Upanishad that has relevance to Gaudiya Vaishnavas in that it extols Krishna as the Supreme God. Jiva's commentary on this text is called the Sukha Vandini. Commentary on Brahma Samhita. Brahma Samhita was discovered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the dedication of the temple in Kerala during his travels in South India. Jiva's commentary to this text is known as the Dig Darshan. Commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that's Rupa Goswami's book, The Nectar of Devotion. Commentary on Ujjvala Nilamani, which is another book by Rupa Goswami. Commentary on Yogasarastavaka. Agni Puranasta Gayatri Vyasa. This work is a commentary on the Brahma Gayatri Mantra as found in the ancient Agni Purana. Padma Pranokta Krishna Pada Padma Chinna. This text by Jiva Goswami describes the insignia found on the feet of Krishna according to the text of the Padma Purana. So Krishna has many symbols on his feet. Radharani as well. And Jiva Goswami analyzes and explains the whole thing. Sri Radhika Kara Pada Stila Chinna. In this work, Jiva Goswami describes the insignia found on the hand of Sri Radha. Laku Vaishnava Toshini. The Laku Vaishnava Toshini is Jiva Goswami's commentary on to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Gopala Champu is a poetic work written by Jiva Goswami and divided into two parts. The first part is the Purva Champa, which is 33 chapters and describes Krishna's life in Vrindavan. The second section, the Uttara Champa, has 37 chapters and describes the pastimes of Krishna after he leaves Vrindavan and the separation of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. The Satsamdara, this is probably among his most famous works. According to Deva Goswami himself, Gopala Bhatta Goswami had already done the preliminary work on these books but could not complete it. Deva took the work of Gopala Bhatta and expanded it into six books where he systematically presents the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with scriptural evidences. Deva also wrote an extensive auto-commentary to the Sandavas called the Sava Samvadini. The six Sandavas are as follows. Tapta Sandava. Tapta Sandava is a treatise on the various types of evidences or pramanas used in Vedic philosophy. So there's different ways, logic, transcendental sound, vibration, sense perception. There's different types of things you can use to prove things. Jiva's conclusion is that Shabda, divine sound, in the form of the Vedic scriptures, is the highest proof, and that all of the scriptures, the Bhagavad Purana, or the Srimad Bhagavatam, is the highest. Bhagavad Sandarbha, the second one, is Jiva Goswami makes the distinction between the impersonal aspects of Godhead, Brahma, the localized form of God within the heart, and every living being, Paramatma, the highest personal aspect of Godhead, Krishna or Bhagavan, and also describes the spiritual realm of Krishna, the modes of material nature, the modes of pure goodness, Vasudha-sattva, the importance of worshipping the deity of Krishna, and the nature of and qualities of the deity. The third Sandarbha is the Paramatma Sandarbha, which describes the Supersoul, Paramatma, and how the Supersoul resides in the heart of all beings. The differences among incarnations are also described, as well as the nature of the conditioned living entity. The illusory potency Maya, the temporal world, the theory of transformation, the various avatars of Krishna, and how they respond to the desires of their devotees, and how God is characterized by six particular opulences. Krishna Sandarbha. And this is Krishna Sandarbha. Jiva gives a number of quotes from various scriptures to prove that Krishna is the Supreme God. He also discusses the pastimes and qualities of Krishna, as well as his avatars and functionary expansions. There are descriptions of Goloka, the planet of Krishna in relation to Vrindavan and this material sphere, the association of Krishna and their the associates of Krishna and their expansions, and also there is a description of the gopis and the topmost position of Radha among them. Bhakti Samdara explains how devotion to Krishna is executed, also discusses Vanashram Dham, the socio-religious system established by the scriptures. The super excellent position of devotion to Krishna as compared to other conceptions such as yoga, the worship of the minor deities of the Hindu pantheon, as being futile in comparison to the worship of Krishna's devotees. This text also explains the liberation of the soul, the vision of Shiva as a devotee of Krishna, how unmotivated devotion to Krishna promotes the devotee to the highest spiritual position, and numerous other points concerning the performance of Vaishnava devotion. Priti Sandarbha. The Priti Sandarbha is a treatise on divine love, the supreme object being Krishna. Love of God, prema, is considered by Jiva to be the highest form of liberation. Jiva goes on to make a comparative study of other types of liberation, but finally concludes that prema bhakti is topmost. There is also a discussion of how to attain prema, how to awaken it, and the symptoms of one who has attained it. Priti Sandarbha also discusses the distinction between mundane lust and divine love, the various mellows found among the associates of Krishna, the super excellence of Madhurya Rasa, divine conjugal love, the overlapping of different rasas, and the glories of Radha. And finally, the Karma Sandarbha. The Karma Sandarbha is a commentary on the 10th canto of... No, sorry, the Karma Sandarbha is a commentary on the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Deva Goswami died in 1596, or 1618, according to some biographies. The Samadhi tomb is located in the precincts of the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan. According to the followers of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Deva Goswami is considered to be an incarnation of Vilasa Manjari, an eternal maid servant of Krishna in the spiritual world. So Jiva is really considered the super brain of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. He's the real philosopher. Rupa and Sanatana Goswami as well, highly respected, but Dibya Goswami is the most prolific. Very important. And some say that when you read Jiva Goswami's work, his logic is so powerful, and his you can't even think of the type of questions he comes up, because he writes in a style, it's a classical style. He presents a question or a doubt, and then you proceed to defeat it and pull it apart and actually prove your point. So he writes in that kind of style. And some, you know, great thinkers, you know, in contemporary ISKCON, they say of Jiva Goswami's work that, you know, he was so intelligent that you can't even think of half of the questions he answers. Like, how did he think of that doubt? So, very very important personality. So today is his disappearance day, so we should we've had our little meditation on him. Yeah. Jagadisha Pandit is the other one. Jagadisha Pandita Hoy Jagad Havana Krishna Prema Mita Varshe Yena Varsha Gama Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 1130. Jagadisha Pandit, the 15th branch of Lord Nityananda's following, was the deliverer of the entire world. Devotional love of Krishna showered from him like torrents of rain. Purport. I'll just read this and then we'll finish up. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes in his Anubhasa, descriptions of Jagadisha Pandit are available from the Chaitanya Bhagavad, Adi Kanda, Chapter 6, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, Chapter 14. He belongs to the village of Yashadagram, in the district of Nadia, near the Chakadaha railway station. His father, the son of Bhatta Narayan, was named Kamalaksha. Both his father and mother were great devotees of Lord Vishnu, and after his death, Jagadisha, with his wife Dukini and brother Mahesha, left his birthplace and came to Sri Mayapur to live in the company of Jagannath Mishra and the other Vaishnavas. Jagannath Mishra is Lord Chaitanya's father. Lord Chaitanya asked Jagadish to go to Jagannath Puri to preach the Harinam Sankirtan movement. After returning from Jagannath Puri, on the orders of Lord Jagannath, he established deities of Lord Jagannath in the village of Yashadagram. It is said that when Jagadisha Pandit brought the deity of Jagannath to Yashadagram, he tied the heavy deity to a stick and thus brought him to the village. The priest of the temple still showed the stick used by Jagadisha Pandit to carry the Jagannath deity. So, Jagadisha Pandit in Chaitanya Lila is older. And there's a pastime where Lord Chaitanya Nimai, who was a codicil, he was supposed to be fasting, and then he said to his, pretending to be sick, the Lord asked him for some food from the house of Haranya and Jagadisha on their codicil day. So they lived quite a wee way away, but somehow Lord Chaitanya asked for the food that had been offered to Krishna. And it turned out that Jagadish and Haranya were making a big offering that day. So it was like very amazing how Lord Chaitanya knew. And there was a big effort. You know, everybody was very amazed, and there was a big effort to give Lord Chaitanya some of that food. So that's where Jagadisha Pandit appears in Chaitanya Leela. So this is going to stay today as well. Right, any questions or comments?
Describe the evolution of his body.
How old was Jiva Goswami when he left his body? Here it's 1511 till 1596. So that's what, like... when it's 1585. Or, on some say also 1533 to 1618, which is pretty similar. About 85 years. Quite a long life. Yes?
Simultaneously one with the Lord and different, totally understand.
That's a very important point. This is very fundamental to what it means to be a Vaishnava or a personalist. Because those who say, no, everything is all one, we're one with the Lord, everything is God, I am God, and the fundamental underpinning of reality is Nirguna Brahman, or formless energy, and somehow this world of form has arisen as an illusion. Such people can have no devotion to God. All they want to do is merge into God. Again, let us put an end to the illusion and again become one. Again, just become, I am God, just like everything else is God and everyone else is God. But this allows for no exchange of love. And it's not even a practical philosophy. Because the question is it can be raised, if everything is all one, a spiritual energy, Brahman, how did the Brahman come under the influence of another energy, avidya, ignorance, to produce this mundane dream world? How did that actually happen? If that's the case, then this energy called illusion must be more powerful than Brahman, or God. So it's a problem, it's a philosophical problem with that philosophy. Lord Chaitanya explains, Lord Chaitanya's philosophy was that we are the energy of God. There's no doubt, we're part and parcel, everything is. But we're the eternal parts and parcels of God. What's that verse? Vivadeva Shruyate. Do you know that verse? That God has multipotencies? Krishna has multipotencies? Well, there's one verse that explains that Krishna has multiple different energies. And they act differently. Different energies act differently. So in one sense, all these energies are one with God. They are God's energies. They're non-different from God. But they have different... they function in different ways. So the living entity, or the jiva soul, us, we are God's energy. So in one sense, we're one with God. At the same time, we're different. You are not God. I am not God. We're very small parts of God. But it's not like if you take a machine and you take all the parts and pull all the parts apart, that there's no machine. You know, if the machine's in parts, then there's no machine. It's just a whole lot of parts, right? Krishna's not like that. Krishna's more like a candle can light many other candles and still remain. Yeah, still remain whole and complete. So even though unlimited jiva souls have expanded from Krishna, Krishna remains Krishna. Krishna is not diminished. And although we are one with God, we're eternally separated, parts and parcels. And we have independence. And the function of that independence is to love God or try and make it in the material world, basically. That's our choice. So therefore we're one with Krishna and also different from Krishna. Just like, okay, here's a question for you. If it's all one, how come I have five fingers? Each finger, you know, you can say that the finger or the hand is part of my body, but it's not my body. The hand on its own is not my body. It's a part of me, but it's not me. And if the hand serves the body, then the hand's dharma or function is fulfilled. And if the example given in Srimad Bhagavatam, that if the hand brings the food to the mouth, so I should use my right hand, then the mouth chews and the esophagus takes the food to the stomach, and the stomach digests, and the blood distributes the nutrients, then the hand is also nourished. So it's the function of the living entity to serve God, and in that way become nourished and satisfied and happy. But if we think we're just one with God, then there's no capacity for service. I like to give you an example. Say, you're a father? You got a child? Yeah. Okay, you had a child, probably many different reasons, but one of the reasons is you wanted a relationship with a small child, right? And eventually that child will grow up, so you wanted a relationship. Now imagine if the child said to you, said, Daddy, you have expanded me, you know, so we can have a relationship. But what I want to do is merge into you. I just want to, like, merge. You know, I don't want this relationship, I just want to merge back into you. That's a bit silly, really. You know? It destroys the function, the whole point of Krishna expanding himself. Yeah. It destroys the whole point of you having a family, if all your family members just want to merge into you. So that's the that's oneness and difference. In one sense, your son is one with you. But in one sense, you know, but in another sense, it's different. And therefore, there's an exchange. So same with us with God. We're one with God. We're His energy. We're eternally His children, so to speak. His parts and parcels. But we're also different. Yeah. That's a Chinchabeda Vainasattva. It's very important. Fundamental tenet of the Vaishnava understanding. Is that okay? Anything else? Okay, Grantaraj Srinivasa Bhagavatam ki?